Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. It's time for Darren and Donick, named Nashville's best sports talk show by the Nashville Scene, with hosts Darren McFarland and Willie Donick on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Second hour of Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick with you on this, I guess, stopped rainy Wednesday here in Middle Tennessee. Tonight, over Memorial Gym, Vanderbilt hosting the number one team in the land. The Vols come to town. The last time that happened, Willie and I were there. Bruce Pearl came off winning that unbelievable game against the Memphis Tigers at the FedEx Forum, came in as the number one team in the land to take on Vanderbilt. I think it was, a Tuesday night after they had just beaten Memphis on Saturday night?
I believe that's correct.
It was a crazy, crazy atmosphere here in Nashville, and the Commodores took down Tennessee, the number one team. So it didn't take long for number one to get knocked off their perch.
Shane Foster, a big night. That night, A.J. Ogilvie.
I'm not sure that's going to happen tonight. I don't think this team is quite equipped. Let's talk to the man who will be behind the mic, giving you the play-by-play on ESPN2, Carl Ravish. Carl, how you doing? Good morning.
How you guys doing? I'm doing great. Bruce Pearl, I talked to him about that, actually. He tells I think it's a funny story. It's a Bruce Pearl funny story in any event. On his banquet circuit, when he goes and speaks, he was given a speech, I think within the last couple of months, and he does use that game as part of his speech because he had a Tennessee fan who said, "Hey Bruce, I remember back in 2008, you guys beat Memphis, and then you came into Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt was a really good team, and you guys lost." And the joke that Bruce tells is, this guy says, "Look, I know it was great while it lasted, but I've had Viagra pills last longer than you guys were number one." So that's a Bruce Pearl banquet story about losing the number one seed right away after being declared number one.
Carl, thank you for joining us. I think you just need to end on that note. Mic drop. See you later. Good job. Well done.
That's a Bruce Pearl joke. It's not mine, but it's a good line. Whoever came up with it is a good line.
That's fantastic. This Vanderbilt team has obviously got huge problems. They're the only winless team in conference play. Tennessee right now just looks so much better than ever. They don't look like they're a fluke that they're number one. I mean, they didn't look great Saturday, Carl, in their win over Alabama, but you're not going to be great and smoke everybody every night. Let's start with Tennessee. When you see the Volunteers, what do you see?
I see the best team in the country, and to me, they've been the best team in the country for a while. I had them number one in the SEC ahead of Kentucky when the season started, and they've just gotten better. As I sit here watching their practice, you know, you're looking at real grown men in Schofield and Williams. I think Bowden and Bone are terrific in the backcourt. I love watching Bone drive and stop, pull up, and hit foul line jump shots. Their bench is getting better. Pons and Fulkerson, to me, they are the class of the league, and I just was with Kentucky last night. They're the best team in the league. Alabama beat Ole Miss last night. Ole Miss has had a really good start, and Alabama dismissed them. I think Alabama and that game says more about Alabama than it did about Tennessee, not being as good as I think they are and other people. I think Alabama's good. And look, conference road games are real hard to win, so that didn't surprise me what Alabama did. And you're right, Tennessee struggled a little bit, but they ended up getting a win. And you're going to have to win games by 30, and you're going to have to win ugly games by 5 or 6. And this team that I'm looking at right now with their coach and their experience and their abilities is an absolute national title contender.
How about on the flip side? Darius Garland, the news has come out. He has declared to go to the NBA. Strange timing, but nonetheless, only 5 games as a Commodore. And, Carl, they just haven't looked like a team that's ever recovered from that injury.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't even know if they recovered from last year's, last year. They've been banged up. I feel bad for Bryce. Missouri went and dealt with the same thing with Porter last year. Here you are with Garland this year. And I know ESPN as a network, in the summer when we were selecting games and helping with schedules, that Vanderbilt was one of the teams that we wanted to see often because there was a lot of excitement around them. And I don't think they've recovered from that. You know, watching football, Mike Vrabel didn't complain too often about the injuries that the Titans had, and here we are. I don't think Bryce is really complaining too much about it, and it's part of the game. You got 10 guys, and you really have, you know, 7 or 8 who are going to contribute. When you lose your number one and you don't have the depth of Kentucky or the depth of Tennessee or even the depth of Auburn, it's gonna hurt you, and that's, you know, that's what we're seeing. You just got to avoid the snowball. I think it is incumbent on the 14,000 and however many are rooting for Vanderbilt tonight to do their best to help. It is college basketball. There are human beings playing, but yeah, they're licking their wounds, and I don't see a win tonight for Vanderbilt based on the way they're going and how good Tennessee is.
Yeah, and it may not feel like a home game either. There may be a whole lot of orange in there.
Yeah.
I want to ask you real quick, and then I'll turn things over to Willie. Have you enjoyed doing college basketball games?
I love it. I do. Yeah, I've been so fortunate for 25 years there to do a variety of things. Little League is always near the top. It was kind of cool. We drove up from Lexington and past Goodlettsville, and, of course, Goodlettsville was in the Little League World Series not too long ago, so that was kind of nice to see that sign. I love Little League. I love the Major League stuff, but college basketball, as simple and silly as it sounds, when you have a clock and all you've done for the most part is a baseball game at the college level, the Little League level, the Major League level, yeah, there's something really refreshing and nice about knowing the game, you know, is being dictated by a clock. You know, there's a pressure to get a shot off in 24 seconds or whatnot. There's a clock that says you got 2 minutes to play and it's a 5-point game. I do love that. There's a different energy about it, and obviously when you're on a college stage, those atmospheres you can't match. So yeah, I do. I love college basketball. I grew up in Massachusetts, and I grew up when Larry Bird and the Celtics were outstanding. So basketball was the sport I watched more than anything. The Red Sox were okay, the Patriots were awful, and the Bruins were a good team year in and year out. But the Celtics and Larry Bird and McHale and Parrish and Dennis Johnson, those were my guys growing up as far as sports to watch literally nightly, because Bird spoiled everybody, or at least all of us.
Carl Ravage, I can see how that could happen. Carl Ravage is with us, ESPN's versatile man, doing some play-by-play tonight at Memorial Gym, Vanderbilt against Tennessee. And Carl, just looking at Tennessee, this is something that's rare in college basketball these days, and it is a team full pretty much of juniors and seniors. And I just wonder how well that will serve them over the long haul here as you evaluate them against some of the teams now like Kentucky and Duke, who, you know, turn over a lot of their roster, it seems like, every year.
Yeah, I think it's a big advantage, and I think it's a big advantage in neutral site games and road games, because they're not going to necessarily be rattled, and they've had experience in those places. So I think it benefits Tennessee more this year than even last year when they were somewhat of a mature team. It was classic. Having done the Kentucky game last night, I think it was Kenny Payne or Tony Barbee, one of them was talking about how it feels like in the case of Mississippi State, they got guys that have been there forever. Like Quindary Weatherspoon seems like he's in year 6. And,
right.
And from the Kentucky perspective, if a player has been anywhere more than 1 year, it feels like they've been there forever, because they're all 1 year guys. Here you got great experience to go with great talent, and you got a coach who's done all this before. They literally, I mean, if you were to have a checklist of, you know, 5 or 6 things for a national champion, they check every single box, Tennessee. They check them all.
Carl, we're going to sneak one baseball question in. We have to.
I love Vanderbilt. I love Tim Corbin. Is that the question?
No, we're not going to go there, although preseason number one, it's going to be a fun year. Everybody is really looking forward to what they have going on this year. But with the Hall of Fame getting announced yesterday, I don't think anybody has any problem with the guys that were in there. To me, the intriguing thing is what's going to happen in the coming years as Clemens and Bonds inch up in the percentage. And then you have on the horizon in a couple years, A-Rod and some other guys that will go on to the ballot. It seems to get more and more complicated every year, but it's going to be very interesting to see how close this gets.
I think until there's a generational change in the people that are doing the voting, that those guys are not going to see their totals climb rapidly. I think it's incremental. You use the word inching. I think that's an accurate word to use with those guys. And until people who are voting literally fall off and other younger people vote, there seems to be a little bit more forgiveness in that generation. Heck, at some point you may have people voting who never saw any of those guys play. I was fortunate enough to cover all four of those guys who got in yesterday, their entire careers. They were, when you look at the list of guys from Yucina and Halladay, Edgar Martinez, they were as good a people, Rivera for sure, as they were players. First of all, you check the Hall of Fame box on the field. And then literally, Messina was a little quirky, but every one of them, there was a maturity about them. They understood their responsibilities to the media. None of them were ever in too much trouble, if any. You never read about them doing anything, you know, outside of what would be considered acceptable norms for athletes. There is that factor. I mean, yesterday's a great example of you want to hold up four guys compared to the ones you just mentioned. One is a brand new card that just came out of the dealership, and another one has got all sorts of rust on it, and you're looking at it and you're like, geez, the engine may be good, but there's just so many things about that I don't want to buy it. And I think that's where voters fall with, you know, as you mentioned, Bonds and Clemens and Rodriguez. And until the voting body changes, I don't see a great deal of empathy or support for those guys. I just don't.
Carl,
Willie
knows that for well over a decade, I have been beating the Edgar Martinez drum, so I was happy to see him get in. The other drum that I've been beating along with Edgar Martinez, I covered the Indians from 94 to 97.
Right.
I would love to see Omar Vizquel. I think Omar Vizquel is a Hall of Famer. That's just me.
Yeah,
and I know he only
in.
Got.
Yeah.
You think he'll get in?
I think he gets in.
Okay.
I do. I think his glove for the years that he was there. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think we've seen in recent years a bunch of guys who are either bat only or glove only, and certainly in Edgar's case, one dimensional bat only. Vizquel, to me, what he did in a generation of other unbelievable shortstops, as you know, stood out as the best defensive shortstop of all of them. I mean, he's Ozzie Smith. He's magic with his glove. I think he's a Hall of Famer.
All right. I love it. Hey, enjoy the game tonight at Memorial Gym. Always good to catch up with you. Thanks for doing this.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Carl Ravish. He'll be behind the mic tonight doing the play-by-play for Vanderbilt in Tennessee. 6 o'clock tip, ESPN2 over at Memorial Gym. We'll come back. We heard you heard us say that Darius Garland had made his decision. We'll talk about it on the other side and a little bit about tonight's game. You're listening to Darren Adonik, 102.5 The Game. Now, one of the storylines for tonight's game is going to be Darius Garland. You're saying, well, he doesn't play for the team. Yeah, I get it, but it's still going to be one of the storylines for the television purposes. They're going to be talking about that because he played all of 5 games at Vanderbilt.
Was it 5? I thought it was 4.
It was 5.
Wow.
It was I think that was the 5th game, the game against Kent. But he has decided to... Now, he has been on the bench cheering for his team, right there for his teammates, and he has helped in the process of getting Scottie Pippen's kid as well. But he's done. I thought it was strange timing. He said in his release, "I would really like to thank Coach Bryce Drew, who has not just been an awesome coach but a great person, and the entire basketball staff. I thank my teammates and Commodore fans for a tremendous opportunity and most valuable experience. Unfortunately, I suffered a season-ending injury. After considerable deliberation with my family and medical staff, I am withdrawing from Vanderbilt this semester to prepare for the NBA draft. I will forever be grateful to to Vanderbilt and wish the program much success for the remainder of the season." That coming from Darius Garland. Like I said, all of 5 games. I have to believe Chatou will be next. We talked about it yesterday. There's just something not right about him. I just don't see him sticking around.
Really?
No.
I've not heard.
I don't think he's ready. But whether he goes to the NBA, I just don't see where. I don't see where he's. There's something not right. I don't know what it is. I'm not around them. There's something not right with him.
I don't know anything about that. To me, he is not ready to go to the pros, Chatou. But let's concentrate on Darius for now, because the Chatou part of this, I think, is going to be really interesting because he's such an important player, and he does have a lot of growing to do. But Garland, as far as the timing, I don't know about the timing, but nobody is surprised that this is happening, even after the injury. I think only those that were probably hoping against hope thought that there was any chance he was going to come back next year, because everybody that I talked to who was in the know said he's still a high first-round pick. And if that's the case, why wouldn't you go? And the nature of his injury is such that he should be back to 100% in time to be in condition for the draft, I think, is what I'm hearing. I'm sure there's a lot of different ways it can go. But you can't be shocked that this is happening. Now, in terms of why now, I don't know. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. It might be a good thing. Not that having him around hasn't been a positive, but this team has got to move forward and come together. And this is something we've discussed the last few weeks. They have gotten off to a rough start. Losing the Ole Miss game to me in the opener, that was a tough blow. That was a blow to their confidence. And then letting the South Carolina game slip away. By the way, South Carolina beats Auburn last night.
Yeah.
South Carolina is a good team. It's not like they lost to a bunch of scrubs. Ole Miss and South Carolina were predicted at the bottom of the league. Both have played great, right? So it's not like you've lost to a bad team. But I think they've got to collectively move forward from Darius Garland. And I don't know what's going on, but maybe this could be a good thing. Just move on from it. It's over. Hopefully Darius will continue to be a great ambassador for the program as much as he can going forward, because I think that's how he can be most useful to the program now. It's extremely unfortunate what happened to him. And I'll always be thankful that he took a shot to stay home and go against the grain. You know, it would have been easy to go to Duke or go to North Carolina or UCLA. He could have gone anywhere. And he stayed home to want to make a difference at Vanderbilt. That
well, like
means
I said,
something.
Him and his parents met in Bryce Drew's office with Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
Okay. And Scottie Pippen Jr. to convince him to come to Vanderbilt. So he didn't have to do that, especially. You don't think he hasn't known? I mean, he didn't make his decision 24 hours ago. He's known. So he knew he didn't have to do that. I don't know. I just think it's a little – I understand what you're saying. I do think the timing's a little strange.
But he was going to do it.
It's not going to affect how the outcome of this game is, because I just think Tennessee is miles ahead of Vanderbilt. I don't even know how this is going to be a close game. Maybe it ends up. I hope it is. I think Tennessee's going to mop them.
It's my opinion, though, that this.
So that's
team,
not going to affect it. But I just think it is strange timing.
I don't think anything of the timing. I don't. I think that this team can play better than they've played. The remaining players that they have can be better. This is a brutal league. I watched a bunch of games last night. This league is really, really good.
Mississippi State, who came in here and never trailed, got mopped last night in Rupp Arena by Kentucky.
But they've got talent. That team has talent. Kentucky is getting better.
They are.
They're making strides.
I was going to say, I've watched their last two games. I watched them against Auburn. I watched them against Mississippi State. And it's exactly what we've been talking about. It's getting close to the end of January, and February is usually the month they start getting everything together and they start looking like a different team. It's starting to shape up like that.
I'm going to tell you what. Alabama is talented.
They are.
Alabama has talent. This league is deep. But I think I just want to see the Vanderbilt team play up to their capability. I don't know how many games that will mean they'll win. It can be better than it is right now, though. I want to see a cohesive unit out there that's fighting for each other, getting better every week. They're a lot younger than the team that they're going to be playing against tonight. They're at home. But I want to see them make strides. And maybe Darius being away from them a little bit more could help. Because right now, they're in a funk. There's just no doubt about it. There are clouds hanging over. I don't know if Darius has anything to do with the clouds, but they need something to shake it up and come together. There's more there.
I'm not saying it can't happen because it can. But to me, they look like a team that's destined to finish dead last in the league. They just are. Like I said, I want to see something change. Can it change? Sure. And maybe to your point, this news right here, that cloud can be lifted and they can finally move on from that because it seems like they have never recovered from his injury. But right now, when I watch them, I just look at a team that's going to finish dead last in the league. That's not good. Like I said, I hope it's a game tonight. I just don't know how it's going to be a game. Tennessee is just that much better. What are they, a 12-point favorite? At Vanderbilt, when's the last time Tennessee was a double-digit favorite here? I can't remember. I'd love to know that.
I don't think it's happened since,
right.
since I've been watching.
Yeah. Jeff down in the Borough. Jeff, what's up?
What's going on, guys?
Nothing.
Just wanted to say the line's down to 9 now. So.
Is it really?
It's down to 9.
Huh.
Money's going towards Vanderbilt, but I'm like you, Darren. I don't see how it's close. I think it could be, and the only one of the I think if Vanderbilt, I'll have to shoot probably have to shoot over 50%, probably 55%. They have to shoot it out of their minds. But I'll just say this: I don't know if you guys watched the Tennessee Alabama game on Saturday, but if Alabama makes their free throws, we're not even talking about Tennessee being number one right now.
No doubt, they were awful.
I mean, they were 2 out of 13, 14, something like that in the second half.
Yeah.
If they make their free throws, like I said, Tennessee's on the – and I just want to say, too, watching the sports last night on one of the sports stations, we all can tell now how many times Tennessee has been number one. They're not used to being number one. That they come in town last night on a double-decker bus and get out like it's the national championship game. So we know how many times they've been number one, and they're just not used to being on top.
It's always interesting how you handle yourself when you are number one. And I'm sure Rick Barnes is aware of that, and he's going to try to push the right buttons to try to remind his team that, hey, just because you're number one doesn't mean you just walk out of a bus and walk into a gym and everything goes well. You've got to earn it. But they're an experienced team. That's what I think would give me a little bit more confidence in this particular situation. But I do think anything can happen at Memorial Gym. And one great performance by Vanderbilt, it could send you back in the right direction. So you never say never, but this does look like a real interesting matchup, a good matchup for Tennessee. Here's what I think to look for tonight, Darren. Chatu, who is a great talent, but the league has figured some things out on him. And he's going up against guys who are pretty unique for Tennessee. You know, Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams are not the biggest guys, right? Chatu is going to have a height advantage on them. But those guys are older. They're men, right? They've been in this league for a while. They're crafty. I don't know who they'll match up because they've got the big man, Alexander, who I think is a key role player for Tennessee. They can put some size on him if they want to. But how will Chatu react against this particular team? I'm really watching him tonight. I want to see him take strides, maturing, learning how to play and have success in this league.
That petty kid for Alabama is fun to watch. I can tell you that.
Wow,
man, kid can shoot. That's
a team to keep your eye on, right there.
They may be a scary team. All right, we'll come back with Terry McCormick on the other side. I want to talk to all the men out there. I've been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and they have started to help you men. Seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, the board-certified surgeon, his wife Daphne Lodge, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff, they want to give you men the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. I hope you want that like I do. In Cool Springs MD, their services have already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area. Improving your immune systems, that's important this time of year. Your energy levels, that's always important. Cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. It's time to make that appointment. What are you waiting for? Dial this number, 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. Or you can always check out their website, coolspringsmd.com. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at noon to kick off the third hour of Darren and Donnie. Chris Mason, fourth and final hour. Willie's partner in the TV booth. They're both off tonight. This game is going to be on national television. Remember, they had the max number of 12, and one of those games is again tonight. So national NBC Sports Network for Vegas and Nashville. We say hello to Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. Terry, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Are you doing, I'm sure you're pretty happy with Mussina and Mo getting in?
Yes, that was, not unexpected with Rivera, although a little bit surprised he got 100% of the vote. But surprised about Mussina, really. Had a very good win percentage, 270 victories, which was actually more than I thought he had in his career. But a compiler, sort of like Don Sutton, one of those guys that, was a good player for a long time, and then when you put the numbers all together, it looks pretty good.
The Titans have found their OC. What did you think of the hire within?
Well, I thought that by promoting Arthur Smith from being the tight ends coach, it was a way to give Jake Locker and the rest of this offense a little bit of continuity, not to have to learn yet another system.
Did you just say Jake Locker?
Did I say Jake Locker?
I think you just
Marcus
said Jake
Mariota.
Locker.
Wow, I think I did say Jake Locker. Wow, Marcus Mariota.
Don't feel bad. I was talking about the upcoming 2012 Hall of Fame class earlier today. So maybe it's in the weather. Maybe it's just in the air today.
Maybe we're showing our age.
Maybe so. The brain cells
Marcus
are starting
Mariota
to go.
And Marcus Mariota and, all the young receivers that are around and everybody, Derrick Henry, at running back, everybody – it keeps them from having to learn yet another system. Now, the drawback to that, obviously, is that Arthur Smith has zero experience as a play caller, so we don't know what his play calling and what his work in this system is going to look like, and neither does anyone else.
I said yesterday on the show that I think it's a huge gamble, and I'm a little surprised that Mike Vrabel, going into his now second season as a head coach, first ever head coach, is going to have his second offensive coordinator, and both are going to be calling plays for the first time ever in their careers.
A
little bit risky.
I can't disagree with that at all. I think when you have a first-time head coach in Vrabel, who's now going into his second year, 1 year under his belt, and he had a first-year play caller last year in Matt LaFleur, and now that LaFleur has gone off to Green Bay, you're going to have another first-time play caller in Arthur Smith. Now, granted, he does have the experience of having been on the staff pretty much longer than any coach that's in the building right now, because he's been there since 2011. But that, still doesn't, hide the fact that he's never called any plays before. He may have had a lot of input into the game plans and things like that, but he's not the one that is trying to figure out what play to call to beat the Texans defense and to keep J.J. Watt off his quarterback when it's third down and five at his own 40.
What do you think their offense is – what do you think they want it to be? That's another thing, because you can't say that they had that all of last year because their offense changed. What they started out to be is not what they ended up being.
Well, I think they started out wanting to be somewhat like the Rams. I don't think they have the playmakers or the skill position players necessary to be that high-flying of an offense. I don't think, that they have the ability to, rack up 35, 40 points a game, obviously, doing that. And I think Marcus Mariota's arm injury contributed to that pretty much. That was one huge factor. And then I think once they realized that they couldn't do it that way, Matt LaFleur kind of changed horses in midstream, and that's when he decided that he was going to ride Derrick Henry down the stretch, and that certainly paid some dividends.
So, Terry, this is something I've thought of a lot, though. With Henry's emergence down the stretch, do you think they are thinking this now needs to become the centerpiece of our offense, where – as before, it was all about getting the most out of Marcus Mariota. But now that he's entering into his prime, he seems to have made a breakthrough here. Do you think there will be more focus on having him become a guy that could get you 1,500 yards in a season?
Well, I don't know if he's going to be able to get you 1,500 yards now. You know, keeping up that stretch of productivity that he had over the last 5 weeks of the season would be pretty tough to do, because, you know, now that people are going to be have an off season to study it and see it, you know, there's no guarantee he's going to be running for 150 yards every week. But I do think that they're going to have to incorporate him and make him a base part of the offense, and maybe lean on him a little bit more until they, you know, determine what they have with Mariota in the passing game, because, you know, we haven't really seen a healthy Marcus Mariota since year two. So you're looking at all the injuries that have piled up with him, and I think you have to look at it and say, I don't know how much they can rely on him. So I think, to your point, I think they probably out of by default have to lean on Derrick Henry a little bit more, and then try to bring the passing game along as the season goes along, kind of the reverse of what they did this year.
Can you provide any insight on what the program looks like for Jack Conklin in this offseason? Because it would seem to me that this is a very, very important offseason for him. It's an offseason he actually will be able to, you know, do some things that he wasn't able to do last year. And I'm sure his goal is to come back into camp and the offseason program in tip-top shape. It's a big year for him.
It's an even bigger year when you consider that the Titans have to make a decision on whether or not they're going to execute his fifth-year option for the next season, because you know, that situation is going to come into play. I think they'll have until May to do that. But, yeah, it really is a big offseason, and 2019 is going to be a big year for Jack Conklin, because I think, you know, I think we all would agree that he was not healthy coming back from that injury just 8 months after having ACL surgery following the injury in the playoff game. And then I think he re-injured the knee there late in the year, landed on injured reserve. So now he gets a full offseason to try and heal and then be part of the off-season program and mini camps and training camp and all those things that he didn't have in 2018 as the Titans were installing the offensive system that Matt LaFleur wanted to run. So assuming that the offensive system is going to stay similar, then, you know, it can only benefit Jack Conklin if he has a full off-season to work in it. Now, there are some people that feel like that he maybe isn't as good a fit for this type of offensive system as maybe he was for what Mike Mularkey and Terry Robiskie wanted to run here a couple of years ago. So, you know, that, I guess, remains to be seen. I think the Titans probably want to see what a healthy Jack Conklin looks like. And then there's also the thought by some that he could be pushed inside to one of the guard positions if they want to make Dennis Kelly the full-time starter at right tackle. So a lot of options there with Jack Conklin, and a lot of question marks as they as he goes into this off season, trying to get back to the form he showed his first couple of years.
That's a really intriguing thought, is Conklin moving to guard and Kelly becoming a starting tackle, because I think we all were kind of looking at the interior of the offensive line, the guards in particular, and wondering if that's an area of the draft they might try to spend a pick, maybe two, to look down the road there to try to bolster.
Yeah, it does give them another option, and also the fact that Quentin Spain is an unrestricted free agent, you know, it gives them another option if they decide not to sign him, or if they decide that they don't want to have to spend, you know, a high pick on an interior lineman and want to maybe use a third, fourth, fifth round pick on a guy and try to develop him for the future. So it probably isn't the most plausible scenario of moving Conklin from tackle to guard, but it is an option if they want to go down that road. I think you will see some change on the interior of the offensive line, whether it's Spain leaving as a free agent or whether it's drafting somebody or bringing in a free agent to compete with Ben Jones and Josh Klein at center and right guard.
How does Arthur Smith last 8 seasons with that many staffs and stay in a building? I mean, it's just such a rare, rare thing in professional sports. I don't know the guy, so I don't know one way or the other. I'm sure you've had way more dealings than me. How does that happen?
Well, I know him a little bit, and, you know, and he seems like, you know, a personable guy. Seems like a guy that gets his job done. He sticks to business. He's a smart, creative guy from what everybody says, and he's a guy that probably will be able to, you know, or at least they're hoping and they're believing that he's going to be able to figure out this thing of, you know, moving up to be the offensive coordinator and kind of put his stamp on it. I think, you know, he's well-liked within the organization, and I think, you know, when Mike Munchak put him on the staff, he was, you know, pretty green. He was a guy who had been like a quality control guy for the Redskins for a year or two. He coached a little bit in college, and he's just kind of grown and worked his way through the ranks. You know, Ken Wisenhunt decided to keep him on when he became head coach, and then when Wisenhunt was dumped in 2015, Mike Mularkey was the tight ends coach, and he became the interim head coach, and that opened the door for Arthur Smith to move up and become the tight ends coach. So he's you know, done a credible job, a competent job, you know, in every task that he's had with the Titans organization. And I think that, you know, the coaching staff, you know, even though there's been a lot of turnover and a lot of change, I think, you know, whenever a new coach comes in, he evaluates the people that are already on the staff to see who might fit what he wants to do, who he can work with, and who he gets along with. And I think, you know, it's a very, you know, positive thing and a good thing for Arthur Smith that he's been able to show that he has the value that he needs to stick around despite all the coaching changes.
Terry, good stuff. Really appreciate it, as always.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. I'm going to give you the odds. I'm going to tell you what are the odds of the Titans and who's the favorite to land Antonio Brown, according to Vegas. We'll do that to wrap up the second hour of Darren and Donick. That's next. Thank you, Ryan. He'll be back in the lineup after serving his two-game suspension tonight out in Vegas. First line back together. Hasn't been together much this year. Victor Arvidsson missed 24 games. Philip Forsberg missed 17 games. Ryan Johansson just served a two-game suspension with his hit on Shifley. So he'll be back in the lineup tonight against Vegas. 9 o'clock, puck drop, pregame at 8. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. We'll get more hockey talk with Chris Mason coming up at 1 o'clock, including the fallout in Edmonton. They have relieved their GM of his duties, and so we'll talk about that a little bit more in the fourth and final hour. Now, I threw out there odds for Antonio Brown. Okay? This is the receiver of the Pittsburgh Steelers today. This is according to the odds out in Vegas. Let me give you the BetDSI odds makers. This is where this comes from. Okay. Any guess on who would be the favorite to land number 84? Mr. Met.
49ers?
Have you seen the list?
Well, I'm just going by Jerry Rice.
It's the 49ers.
Well, why are you surprised? Jerry Rice went out and just sent the signal to everybody. He wants to go play for the 49ers. That didn't just happen. I mean, that's probably tampering, but...
Probably. Well, he doesn't work for them, does he?
No, but I mean...
Don't you have to work for them? You have to be on payroll?
There are ways.
Yeah. 49ers are the favorite. Who's second?
Well, let's say the New York Jets.
The Jets are second. You're on a roll. Who's third? Josh is back there going, wow, Willie. Woo.
How do you know? That's exactly what I said.
Were you saying that too?
Yep.
Have you guys seen the list?
I said, wow, Willie. I'm curious how you heard that.
I'm just thinking what teams are bold enough to try to make a move like that. The Jets would certainly fit that category. They're trying to make a splash. They've got a new coach. They've got a young quarterback.
They have no receivers.
Right. So there's a fit there.
Okay. So 49ers one, Jets two. Who's three?
Three. This is where this is where it gets tough for me.
Josh is waiting on bated breath here.
You got a guess, Josh? You want to see? You got a confident in who number three is?
No, I just want to see you keep rolling.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't get your hopes up on this one.
Who else has got no receivers whatsoever?
Well,
none.
The Titans.
They're on the list. I'm not saying, I'll get to that.
I'm not saying none whatsoever. I like Corey Davis, but I am intrigued. I don't know how their salary cap fits. I don't know what it would take to get him. Like, if it's just a throwaway Randy Moss or Terrell Owens kind of deal where Pittsburgh just wants him gone.
Well, that's going to be the case because you have to pay him $22 million.
That's the thing. I don't know if you could fit it in the structure of what they want to do, but would I be willing to give him a second chance to come here? Yeah, if I'm the Titans, for the right price. If I didn't have to hardly give up anything other than to pay him a lot of money, I'd have to look at it. So what number are the Titans on the list?
You have a guess, three. We'll just stick with three. The Bills. The Bills are three. They have no receivers.
That's not happening.
Not sure they have a quarterback.
That's not happening.
Yeah, I don't see that either. Four, Arizona Cardinals, even though Larry Fitzgerald has made the announcement, he is coming back for his 38th season.
Did he play in Super Bowl VI?
By the way, he's a guy who should get 100% of the votes, right? Everybody loves him.
Yeah.
He was a great player. He is a great player, was. I'm not sure he's great anymore. Of course, Arizona isn't very good. But he's a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. Then, after the Cardinals, so that is 1, 2, 3, and 4. 49ers, Jets, Bills, Cardinals, two, and I repeat, two AFC South teams.
Would the Texans?
I'm asking you to name the two AFC South teams.
Well, I'm going to say the Titans are one.
That are next.
Titans are one of them, and I will take a flyer on the Texans being the other.
It's the Colts. They got all that cap room, pairing him with T.Y. Hilton and Ebron and Andrew Luck. That would be scary.
Who's first? Yeah, I want you to name two. Who's first and who's second?
Titans, then Colts.
Titans, then Colts. Okay, and you said?
Texans, Titans.
Texans, Titans. Well, both of you were wrong. Indy is first. By the way, if Indy gets Antonio Brown, see you later. Bye-bye. There's no division titles coming anytime soon. Not in this market.
But why are the Steelers trading Antonio Brown?
Colts will win.
If it's that simple.
They will take over, winning the division many, many times. Well, I guess anything can happen. If Luck goes down, then that changes. If they have Luck, Brown, Hilton, Ebron, Mack, bye-bye. Offensive line, not good. Colts are first, then the Texans. I can't imagine why the Texans would be in the market for Antonio Brown. You have DeAndre Hopkins. You have Will Fuller. I don't know what they're – I guess they're not going to keep Demaryius Thomas. You don't need you can't. How are you going to keep everybody happy? Antonio Brown, he's already always unhappy if he doesn't get the ball 50 times a game. Well, you got to give DeAndre Hopkins his 14 targets a game. So that makes no sense to me at all.
They want to sling it. They want to sling it all over the place.
But if you don't have the number one guy, I get it. They have an elite number one. I'd take Hopkins over Hilton all day. Way more than in Indy. Indy, like, I get. Like you said, they have a ton of cap room. Hilton's, he's good.
He's very good.
But I think Luck makes him. I do. I think the franchise quarterback makes him. He's a good receiver. I don't think he's great. You think he's great? I wouldn't put him in the same category
as
Hopkins.
He's very good. No, Hopkins, it's also utilization. Hopkins gets a volume of passes that Hilton doesn't get.
Okay, so all of them, none of them were tied. So it was 49ers, Jets, Bills, Cardinals, Colts, Texans. Three teams next have the same odds. Browns, Raiders, Bears. Browns, Raiders, Bears. Then there are four teams with the same odds after that. And one of them, Pittsburgh Steelers. Another team, the Denver Broncos. Another team, Green Bay Packers. And the other team in that group, the Tennessee Titans. So the Titans, according to Vegas, have the same odds as the Steelers.
Which is not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree.
He won't be back.
I agree. But if he goes to Indy, yikes. What you want is for him to go to a team that always stinks, like the Jets or the Bills.
But if you're the Steelers.
Or the Cardinals.
If you're the Steelers, you hope that there are enough teams that make you offers that you can get a pretty good return. If you have teams beating down your door saying, we'll take Antonio Brown. We want him. We know he's got issues, but he just needs a fresh start. Then they'll get some more return. If the phone's not ringing, then all of a sudden you got to give him away for a fourth round pick like Randy Moss, then that completely changes everything. So the big question will be, what do they get in return if they are going to make this deal?
The team with the worst odds to land Antonio Brown, the New York Giants. Worst odds, all by themselves. Last on the list. All right, we'll come back. Tim Hasselbeck to kick off the third hour of Darren and Donnie. That's next.